the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Well, welcome to week two, exploring the Old Testament book of Micah. Well, with lockdown lifting, Alison and myself spent a few days away last week at one of our favourite places in Cornwall, Polzeath. For those of you who don't know the beach, as the waves roll in on a rising tide, they're squeezed between the bay's headlands, and so it's one of the best surfing beaches in the right weather in the whole of Cornwall. Okay, honesty time. We don't actually go there to surf, but to bodyboard. But just like the surfers, bodyboarders spend a lot of their time looking out to sea, watching each set of waves coming in. You often let the first couple of waves pass you by, because you know that the later ones will build on these previous ones to give a stronger, higher wave, which you can ride on for longer and faster. Well, why am I talking about Polzeath Beach tonight? Well, I think just like a set of waves which roll in together towards the beach, the book of Micah arranges Micah's speeches in the same way. The best way to understand the book, I think, is to see it as containing three movements or waves of announcements from God to his people. Chapters 1 to 2, chapters 3 to 5, and finally chapters 6 to 7. And just like waves, the message of each movement builds on the previous one, giving more information, greater detail and focus on the situation that the people of God are in. It's also important to know that each movement comes in two parts. They start with Micah explaining that the people of God's evil behaviour will lead to judgment from God. But each ends with a message of hope, a message telling the people that the future is not ultimately dark, that God will come and rescue his people out of the darkness of their own making. Now, I'm sure there's also a wave analogy for that as well, but I couldn't think of one at the time of preparing this. But let's dive into our text tonight. So we're mainly going to reflect on Micah's message found in chapter 3, the start of Micah's second wave, as it were. And so we'll be building on the themes which Nick introduced last week when he spoke on chapters 1 and part of chapters 2. Now, like chapter 1, chapter 3 is a message of complaint and judgment. So why is God bringing judgment on his people? The very people he rescued from slavery in the land of Egypt. The people he led into the promised land, the people from among whom he raised up leaders to guide them, the very people he chose to be his light to the world. Judgment is ultimately coming because of their sin. Sin with a big S. You see, the central problem for God's people was their failure to worship and walk with God. When you read the narrative of the Old Testament, you read that throughout their history, the people of God regularly turned their backs on him. They devoted their time, their wealth, their minds, souls and even spirits to something else. They worshipped idols instead of God. And they never seemed to learn from their past mistakes. The Old Testament is littered with accounts of their idolatry. Just as Genesis narrates the story of Adam and Eve choosing their own path, so in the book of Micah, we read of God's people walking away from God's path yet again. Paul tells us in Romans 1:21-23 that this turning away from God was not simply a problem for the people of God, but is a universal problem of life in which all humanity chooses to follow. Let me read you Romans. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God, nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like a mortal human being and birds and animals and reptiles. In the words of Stephen from the commentary that we're recommending to read alongside this series, Stephen Umm's Micah for You, he states, an idol captures the hearts and imaginations of those who worship it. Well, I wonder if there are any particular idols which you are naturally drawn to. I wonder what your idol blind spots are. Now, if we turn away from God and worship something else, we're not going to look to God for our values, our purpose to life, the pattern and rhythm to how we live our lives. Our lifestyle will reflect a different set of values. And this is what lies at the centre of Micah's complaint in chapters 2 and 3. The people of God are sinning with a small s, day in and day out, because they have sinned with a capital S. They're following idols. Last week, we heard Micah's complaint in chapter 2 against the wealthy, the economic leaders, those who are abusing their fellow Jews, those who are gathering land and property, who wanted more and more and did not seem to care how they got it and what impact their actions had on others. Well, further on in chapter 2, and more fully in chapter 3, Micah focuses on God's complaint against Israel's civil and religious leaders. He declared that their behaviour was self-serving rather than serving the needs of the whole community. The leaders were using the power and authority which they had been given to shepherd God's people to grow rich themselves. Let me reread Micah's complaint as summarised in verses 9 through to 11 of chapter 3. "Hear this, you leaders of Jacob, you rulers of Israel, who despise justice and distort all that is right, who build Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with wickedness. Her leaders judge for a bribe, her priests teach for a price, and her prophets tell fortunes for money. Yet they look to the Lord's support and say, 'Is not the Lord among us? No disaster will come on us.'" All the main offices of state, all the institutions which shape the community, which set the values and standards for the ordinary people, Micah says are corrupt, they're broken. The elders or judges who sat at the city gates, they were meant to guide the people in how to live as God's covenant people. Their role was to protect the vulnerable, to help the hurt and powerless, to rule on disagreements, to maintain a just society. A society shaped by God's values and concerns, where all people made in the image of God were treated as equals. Well, her leaders judged for a bribe. And the priests, well, they were meant to teach the people the Jewish sacred tradition. The temple lay at the heart of the community. It was where the Holy of Holies, where heaven and earth met. The priests were responsible for running of the temple, for offering the sacrifices for sin, etc. And yet that's not what they did. The priests taught for a price. The priests were sinning the most by abusing their position in society and worshipping money more than God, whilst at the same time standing in his temple. And then we come to the prophets. They come in for particular criticism because their role was to challenge the people when they went wrong. They had the responsibility to help the people remain faithful, to call them back to worshipping God. And yet they are willing to tell the people what they want in order to receive money. As it says, her prophets tell fortunes for money. And back in chapter 2, verse 6, the prophets tell Micah to shut up, because he is undermining their message, cutting in on their finances. God's own messengers are worshipping money, not him. Now, it is bad enough when ordinary people choose to worship idols, but there's even a bigger problem when the leaders do so. Think about the impact on a community if the leaders are idol worshippers. They're corrupt, they're self-seeking, they're greedy. A society whose leaders fall into idolatry will inevitably evolve into a society full of institutional and structural sin. Let me explain how this happens. Over time, the corrupt behaviour of leaders establishes a new normal. People get used to their leaders' behaviour. Ordinary people begin to expect their leaders to behave like they do. Future generations grow up to accept this behaviour. Their behaviour is institutionalised, normalised. It would be something everyone who became a judge or a priest, etc., did. It becomes a tradition. And if it was good enough for our ancestors, then it's good enough for us today. Those who hold office and have power over the promotion of future leaders can have a huge impact on an institution's ethos. Even institutions which are established for the good of society are open to be corrupted. Idolatry destroys justice. It leads to injustice. And this is why individuals who hold positions of leadership need to be held to account so that the right values shape the activities of the institutions they are leading. The book of James in the New Testament begins to explore this issue itself and how it happens within the church. In chapter 3 of the book of James, in verse 1, it says this: "Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly." Now, later this year, we hope to explore themes of justice, equality, and fairness in more detail when we examine what it means when the Bible tells us that humans are made in the image of God. But for now, let us use Micah to remind us that any society where their leaders are idol worshippers can easily become a failed state by God's standards. Some failed states may be obvious to you. I wonder if you can think of any modern ones. I wonder what they did or what they do idolize rather than God. Some modern failed states may not be failed states by the world's eyes, but because Christians hold to different values, in our eyes, we may call them failed. Now, as Nick said last week, in biblical times, prophets were not meant to be soothsayers or fortune tellers, but instead their role was to be one of social criticism. They were the spiritual and ethical consciences of the nation. The Old Testament prophets, what I call prophets with a capital P, were anointed by God's Spirit to bring God's message to God's people, reminding them how to be a light to the nations, how to reveal God's character to his creation. When people encounter God's people, they should experience what God is like. So part of the prophet's role is to warn the people of the consequences of failing in their calling, failing their vocation, their role to be the covenant people of God. But remember last week, Nick emphasized that God's judgment on people is not vindictive. It should not be viewed as simply punitive, but instead its purpose is restorative. It doesn't leave God's people in the darkness of despair, but instead it leads his people out into the light of hope. In all three movements or waves of prophecy found in Micah, chapters 1 to 2, 3 to 5, 6 to 7, Micah's announcements of judgment are followed by messages of hope. Judgment is not the end. And next week, we'll begin to explore the messages of hope found in the words of Micah. The message of the prophets reminds us, as much as the New Testament does, to love our neighbours, to treat all people equally, to use our power for the good of others, to live sacrificial lives. The prophets of the Old Testament, prophets with a capital P, were courageous individuals who spoke truth to power. Now, whenever people lose direction, they need brave people to speak truth to them. And whenever institutions and societal structures lose direction, they need brave people too, to challenge their behaviour as well. So as Micah reminds us, all institutions can fail. But if we're brought up within the society to accept the status quo, to see the values and behaviour expressed by its institutions as normal, how can we be sure that the values and structures they each embrace are in keeping with God's own values? Well, clearly we have the Bible. But history shows us how easily we can use the Bible to justify our own ideas and values. Therefore, it's important to not simply read and study the Bible on our own, monologically, as it were. Sorry about using this long word, but you'll see why I chose to use it. I believe we can't read the Bible in isolation on our own. We need to listen to other voices. And this is particularly true if, like me, you are someone who, due to my sex, ethnicity, wealth, age, and education has gained significant power, status, and benefit from the status quo. I need to listen to the voices of those who study the Bible from the margins, those with less power, those with less status, those with less investment in keeping the status quo. Perhaps people like Micah himself, who came from a small village outside of Jerusalem and yet came to the city to speak and challenge the leaders. We all need to dialogue with other people, to be challenged by their reading of the Bible, to reflect on their experience of life both in society and the church. We need to hear their story. Dialogue, not monologue. We need the voice of modern day prophets, prophets with a small p. Now, as someone whose professional life for many years involved formal theological education and research, I'm well aware that most theology and Bible commentaries are written by Western educated, middle-aged white men. Now, this does not automatically mean that what they have written is wrong, but it does mean that their thinking and writing may have been shaped by institutional and cultural biases. They may not have picked up certain nuances from a text. They may have read a text in a certain way because that is their tradition. We have all been shaped by the communities in which we live. I came to fully understand this 22 years ago when I was a research assistant to two amazing theologians who helped to open my eyes to the danger of the culture that we live amongst. Lish Eves, who was a missionary for over 20 years to Sumatran mountain tribal communities, and Mary Evans, who co-edited IVP's Woman's Bible Commentary and wrote a significant book on women in the Bible, they taught me how we often do not notice the cultural glasses through which we view the world and read the Bible. Micah reminds us all that we all need to be open to listen to modern day prophets, prophets with a small p, through whom the Holy Spirit can speak truth to power in both the church and wider society. Now, the Me Too and Black Lives Matter movements contain a wide variety of voices, but within their ranks, there are strong Christian voices that we must listen to. It's so easy using technology to live within our own echo chambers, to only hear the voices of those we agree with. The algorithms used by our social media apps tend to connect us to like-minded people. The newspapers we read or the news channels we watch are shaped by editorial values. May I encourage you this week to read or listen to voices from outside of your own echo chamber. In our home group series recently, we worked our way through Phil Knox's book, Story Bearers, and session 3 was all about listening to others. I was reminded, you have one mouth and two ears, so listen twice as much as you talk. My challenge to myself, as well as to you today, is who will you listen to this week? Whose voice might bring a prophetic word into your life? And vice versa, whose life can you bring a prophetic voice of truth to as well? Just as Micah challenged the people of God to leave their idolatry behind and turn back to God, how will you speak truth to power this week? How will your words and deeds help bring God's justice, God's hope, God's love to others? Micah reminds us also that God is a God of hope. The New Testament reveals that this hope comes ultimately through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. We ourselves can be forgiven for our own times of idol worship and come afresh to God because of his love for us. And we can all be messengers of forgiveness and hope to our communities. So let me end tonight with the words of John Lewis, who died recently. He began speaking out alongside Martin Luther King Jr. back in the 1960s, but never stopped campaigning his entire life. He certainly was a modern day prophet. Choose confrontation wisely, but when it is your time, Don't be afraid to stand up, speak up, and speak out against injustice. Amen.